When you go to business, when you go to work, is there some sort of magnet at the threshold by which your Christian values must be left at the door? Well, recently we saw a high-powered situation where a man was forced to resign from a company that he apparently even started because he agreed with traditional marriage and not same-sex marriage. We also see a situation where our own government is taking to task companies like Hobby Lobby, where they believe in pro-life and they do not believe in abortion, and therefore they don't want to support abortion. And there's even a Supreme Court case involved in this. We're going to talk right now with a college professor at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., Dr. Andrew Abella. He has co-authored a book called A Catechism for Business, Tough Ethical Questions and Insights from Catholic Teaching. And, of course, this applies to all of us as Christians. Dr. Abella, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So tell me, is there a big magnet at the threshold of the business so that all your Christian values and morals and so forth go out the window when you go right into the office?
You know, apparently the U.S. government wants us to believe that. And I think that's what the Hobby Lobby case is about. In the government brief for this case, they basically said that Hobby Lobby, the owners of Hobby Lobby, shouldn't care that the new Obamacare legislation forces them to pay for abortifacient drugs that cause abortions, right? That they shouldn't care because this is a limited liability company and therefore all it's supposed to do is make profits. And they say because it's limited liability, you have no responsibility. You shouldn't worry about this. So when I die and go before my maker, I'm supposed to say, Lord, I wasn't responsible for whatever went on in my company because it's limited liability, which is, of course, completely absurd, right? But this is actually the case that they're making.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I think, you know, now you obviously are coming from a Catholic perspective. This is an evangelical audience for the most part. And I think it shows you that we're all in this together. Hobby Lobby, that is evangelical owned. There are some Catholic organizations that are also throwing down the gauntlet with the HHS mandate and saying, we won't go along with this. This violates our principles. We don't believe in abortion-inducing drugs and having that paid for through our, you know, company.
Yes, being forced to pay for something that you consider to be immoral, and in this case, gravely immoral. So my own university, Catholic University, we are also suing the federal government on this,
right?
Because they're trying to force us to do the same thing. Some people have said, and I think they may be right, that this particular case is the most important in the history of this country. Because if we lose our religious freedom, if I lose the right to live as a Christian in the business world, when you think about it, if you're in business, that's 8, 10, 12 hours a day, so the majority of your life, and you're told you can't act as a Christian during that period, that's a really serious problem, and that undermines arguably what makes this country great is the freedom to exercise one's religion.
Yeah, and in fact, if you look at what the founding fathers said, you could see over and over and over they really cared about the rights of conscience, even if they disagreed with the particular instances. George Washington didn't appreciate, for example, that the Quakers wouldn't join the revolutionary cause, but he understood that that was their conscience, and he didn't chide them for it, and he certainly didn't punish them for it.
Exactly. And just to emphasize this, so Congress a few years ago passed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which affirmed that the U.S. government has no right to deprive us of our religious freedoms unless they can show a very, very compelling interest for the country. And then in the debate, in the actual hearing, the counsel for Hobby Lobby made, I think, a really good point. He said, how on earth can the U.S. government claim that Obamacare, the desire of the Obamacare legislation to provide abortifacient drugs is a compelling government interest when they're handing out these left and right, they're giving permission to delay or to waive and so on. So clearly it isn't a compelling government interest.
All right, now let me ask you this. Some have said that, okay, look, there is a religious exemption for the abortifacient aspect of the HHS mandate. But Hobby Lobby is a company. And when it comes to companies, well, then, you know, why should religion, rule the roost?
Well, so the book you mentioned, the book we've just published, is called A Catechism for Business. What we have
a catechism for business. A catechism for business. Okay.
Is the title of the book, and the subtitle, Tough Ethical Questions Faced by Business Leaders. And so we have 144 questions, the kinds of things that people will struggle with in business. And then we give quotes from Catholic teaching, which is certainly Christian teaching. I think this is relevant for all Christians, about how to live as a Christian in business. So it's a whole book with suggestions, ideas, guidance on how to live as a Christian in business. So how can you say Christian teaching has no relevance to business? Why would churches teach about how to be moral in business if church teaching had no relevance to business? Do you see my point?
Oh, yeah. And isn't it true historically that Christianity had a lot to do with the rise of business in the first place? I mean, especially with capitalism. When you look at, let's say, bookkeeping, accounting, the father of all accounting, wasn't that Fra Pacciolo? I forgot his name.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He was a monk.
Yeah, yeah. And Calvinism had a lot to do with, let's say, you know, some aspects of capitalism taking off in certain countries. And so, you know, there's a blend here, but it gets back to Christian teaching in one way or another. In fact, in some ways, Jesus started it all by saying, treat others as you would have them treat you.
And that's central to a flourishing economy, right? You cannot have a successful economy without trust, without honor, without discipline. And for many, many people, arguably the majority of people in this country, their sources of morality, the reason they are trustworthy, the reason they are hardworking and so on, is because they try to live their faith. Now, you can argue some people could be successful in business without being believers, but for many, many people, their success, their motivation to do good, right, and to do good in business comes from their religious faith. And if you prevent them from exercising that faith, I think you weaken the exercise of business, and you're going to have to multiply the laws and regulations because you'll have a lot more cheating and you know, corner cutting and so on going on.
That's very true. It's like the old statement from G.K. Chesterton where he said, if men won't live by the Ten Commandments, then they're going to have to be ruled by the 10,000 commandments. It's really true.
We are living that nowadays. This expansion of regulations, right? Anybody who runs a business knows that there's always something new coming down the pike that creates greater inefficiency. Whereas if we ran our businesses morally, honestly, you know, then you don't need those 10,000 regulations or 10 million. It's probably closer to what we have now.
Sure.
Now,
apparently in the book, you say that there are two views of what a business is for. What are they and how are they relevant to Sibelius versus Hobby Lobby?
So the government's view is that a business is solely to make money. The purpose of business is to make money. And that's, we think, a very incomplete view, a very inaccurate view. Obviously, you have to be profitable to be a business because that's how you fund yourself. Right? That's how you grow. But, you know, you have to breathe to be alive, but it doesn't mean that breathing is the purpose of life, right? So nor is eating, nor is exercise. These are important things that you have to do. Likewise, a business has to be profitable, but it's not the purpose of the business. And in fact, when people set as the sole purpose of business to make lots of money, you get Enron and you get these various other collapses, right? Because then you start to cut corners in order to make as much money as possible. Mm. The real purpose of business, and on this one we actually have a quote from Pope John Paul II, which I think every Christian would appreciate. It says the purpose of business is not just to make profits, but is to be a community of persons in service to themselves and society. So the reason I have a business is to provide opportunity for employment and to provide some kind of good, some kind of service to the community, to the country, to the world. When you have that vision, you prosper as a company. And I think that you'd say that's true of Hobby Lobby. You'd say that's true of many successful businesses, especially those that have been successful over many years, right? Those that go from generation to generation, family businesses, they're not just in it for the money. And that's the key thing. Hmm.
You know, and it's interesting, too, when you think about some people who, let's say they're in business and maybe in the short run they do well, but they trample on other people and, you know, basically they're a jerk and you don't want to deal with them. Over time, clients don't want to deal with them because, you know, it's not reciprocal. They're not applying Christ's golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. They're applying more of the world's golden rule. Whoever has the gold makes the rules. But in the end, I think they lose because you don't want to deal with them. You reap what you sow.
They do. And And you don't. So we have a business school here at Catholic University where we try to teach a Christ-centered view of business. And it's clear, I mean, when you look at the research, companies that are long-term successful, they tend to want to honor their customers, their employees, and treat people well. And you think, well, if it's so clear, why doesn't everyone do it? And the answer is, of course, the fact that Adam and Eve and original sin. We are all subject to original sin. And so people will sin, people will do wrong. But if we teach them the wrong ideas, they'll do wrong even more. You know, if we tell them you're only in it for the profits, that's what business is all about. And that's what the government is trying to say here, mm-hmm. by trying to say that you can't be a Christian in business.
Wow. And, you know, it's almost like what we need more of in society are Christians, sincere Christians, living out their faith in whatever particular calling they have. We don't need less of that. We need more of that. And here's our own government discouraging that in cases like this one of Sibelius versus Hobby Lobby.
It's very concerning. So our business school is only a year and 3 months old at this point, but we're booming. We have over 500 students. Everything's going well. And then along comes this court case saying that basically what we're teaching is illegal. If the government is saying you can't exercise your religious faith in business, then I may as well shut up shop and go home, because that's what we're teaching our students, is how to be a man or woman in the business world, and because that's what the business world needs, as you say.
All right, right now we're talking to Dr. Andrew Abella. Am I pronouncing that right, sir? Your last name?
Exactly right.
Okay.
Exactly right.
And he is the co-author of a new book, which is called A Catechism for Business. Now, Dr. Abella not only teaches at Catholic University in the School of Business, he's the dean of business there, dean of the School of Business. He provides consulting and training to several major corporations, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Microsoft Corporation, H.J. Hines, and so that's really quite a resume, and I could see how this case could have serious implications, obviously not just for you, but for any person who's trying to, you know, apply the mind of Christ to all of life. I mean, to me, that's the goal of life, and here our own government is saying, no, you shouldn't do that, because abortion rights trump all other rights.
It's very bizarre, and it's scary. It is scary. The attack on life, right, is such a grievous one. When you just look at the numbers of babies that have been slaughtered, that are slaughtered year after year after year, you know, and it's this hidden plague, you know, this hidden disease of our country is really frightening, and cannot go on without ultimately, I think, destroying. I think it was Mother Teresa who said, you know, a society that kills its own young cannot have a much of a future, you know. I have a friend who did some, was an economist who did some analysis, showed that if abortion had never become legal in this country, we wouldn't have a social security problem.
Yeah.
Because we've killed off so many young people.
Yeah, 55 million unborn babies. Those 55 million unborn babies, they would be alive today. Many of them would be working, and they would be contributing to the Social Security. You're absolutely right.
All
right, now I've got a question. Why should a company be allowed to be exempted from a government mandate because it violates the moral or religious views of its owners?
Because the moral and religious views of the owners trump pretty much everything else, right? If the government is not here to protect our freedoms, then what is it here for, right? And so the only time you want to limit somebody exercising their religious rights is if it effectively gets in the way of the religious rights of others, right? So if I claim there's a religious right that I wanted to go out and kill a bunch of people, well, then the government would do right to say, no, you don't, you know, absolutely not. But to say that, and remember, this is a private corporation. This is owned by a family, right?
Talking about Hobby Lobby.
Hobby Lobby particularly,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah.
This is the big difference between corporations and the government. When the government decides to do something, I have no real way to opt out of that, you know? But if a company does something I don't like, I don't have to do business with that company.
Right.
You know, presumably, if Hobby Lobby's employees really, really wanted abortifacient drugs paid for by their company, they would probably have left that company and gone to work somewhere else. That's the joys of a free country. Now, I recognize that argument has limits. If it's even the bottom of a recession and there aren't jobs out there, then you're kind of stuck with the job that you have. I recognize that. But again, here, it's not like the government is saying, no, it's not like Hobby Lobby is saying, if you have an abortion or if you use contraceptives that cause abortions, we're going to fire you. They're not saying that. They're just saying, we're not going to pay for that. You pay for it, you know? And so it's such an extreme overreach, I think, on the government's part that I really, really hope that the case goes in favor of Hobby Lobby.
Hmm. But you know what's so strange, too, is we've gotten to the point in this country where we have these annual cliffhangers, if you will, where every June or so we have to wait until our robed masters come from Mount Olympus, if you will, and they rule what they will. And a lot of times these decisions are so close, they're 5-4. And then we, the American people, are stuck with these decisions. You know, and next thing you know it, oh, the Constitution basically allows for the rights of same-sex marriage. I mean, that's what they had in mind back in 1787. I don't think so, but that's what the court says, and then we're stuck with the results.
It can be very frustrating. So I'm not an expert on the Constitution, but it can be very frustrating looking at the. I mean, Roe v. Wade is a prime example, right? How they can have said, oh yeah, this is protected. I mean, and it's such a tortuous logic. You know, the right to privacy means you can kill your own child. That's an interesting one, you know. It's tough. I think partly we, the business schools, are a little bit to blame here, because you've seen over the last 20 or 30 years, people have tried to make the claim that business is an amoral science. It's just pure science. You know, you just calculate what needs done, and then the goals are you kind of set independently of what it is that you do. And I think we made a big mistake with that, and that's what we're trying to correct with our own business school, to say that every time you act in a business, your morality matters. You know, it matters. I remember some years ago, there was a business leader who said, and you can imagine you couldn't get away with this today, but he said, if any of my executives cheats on his spouse or her spouse, I'll fire them. Because if their own dearest, most beloved cannot trust them, wow, how can I trust them?
Yeah.
You know, I think a really good point to make there, you know, that morality really, really matters. And for most people in this country, morality comes from your religion.
Right? Yeah, very, very good point. In fact, John Adams, our second president, said famously, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. We're talking right now with Dr. Andrew Abella, co-author of a book called A Catechism for Business. Now, Dr. Abella, I don't have the book in front of me. It has not yet arrived. But I want you to walk through some of these key principles that you point out in the book. I guess, basically, Christian principles that apply in the business realm. What would be the first most important one, you know, unless it's already the golden rule, which we've already covered?
Right. We're talking about the golden rule. So we start, the book is divided into sections. And the first one is sort of the general kind of principles, general questions. And we start question number one, the very first, is about private property. Do we have a right to private property? Because if you don't, then sort of all of business goes out of the window, right? If you can't, if there's no ownership, then there's no, and so clearly, yes, that God made us as material beings. And so we need material things to live and to survive. We need a house to live in, clothes to wear, food to eat, and so on. And so we have a right to private property. But then it goes on to say, well, how as Christians should we use our property? And the answer there is we're supposed to use it for the service of others. So when I have, so God created the world for the use of everybody, but God in his wisdom recognized that as fallen people, we can't just leave stuff lying and take as we need, because that's just a recipe for chaos, as we have seen throughout history. And so you need private property to organize things. But those of us who own property, even property acquired, especially acquired through our own efforts, through our own hard work, we shouldn't have the attitude of it's mine, I do what I like with it. We should have the attitude of it's mine, God has given, he has blessed me, and I'm supposed to use those blessings in his service and the service of others. It doesn't mean that therefore the government should tax everything away and be the one to redistribute. That's a false kind of then interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
So we start out with this notion of private property and how you're supposed to live with it. We then go on and talk about, in this case, particular teachings from Catholic popes about socialism and capitalism, whether the church approves of one or the other. And many of your listeners might be surprised to know that Pope after Pope after Pope have condemned socialism. Socialism has never, ever been approved by the Catholic Church. In fact, it's been condemned because it's an atheistic philosophy, right? It's one that removes people's freedom, their religious freedoms, as we're seeing, but also their freedom to act in the marketplace, their freedom to acquire, to own property, and to sort of realize themselves and to be creators themselves, to be creative like the Creator. You know, we are created in His image, and then one of those reflections of that image is that we like to create like Him. And so socialism violates all of that. On the contrary, the teaching on capitalism is much more nuanced. It says, well, as Christians, we should approve of capitalism so long as we understand it as something that is entered into for the purpose of serving others, not for the purpose of just making as much money as you can. So there are people who will make the argument, you know, that the purpose of business is to maximize profits and everything else will work out fine if you just leave us alone. Well, that isn't the truth. That's not the way that God made the world. God made the world as an opportunity for us to live and follow His teachings, right? And so we have to do that in business to make capitalism work. Otherwise, you get, you know, the collapse of 2008. You get all kinds of problems.
Well, and I think the collapse of 2008, while capitalism got a bad rap, I think in reality it was crony capitalism. When the government kind of doles out favors to certain key people if they have the right lobbyists and so forth, which is really terrible, versus the hardworking person who uses their God-given gifts and talents, enriches others, and then becomes wealthy him or herself because by giving, they receive. To me, free enterprise is far more fitting of the Christian worldview than socialism, where, you know, the government decrees, you know, thou shalt not have poverty here and so forth. And in a sense, they make everybody more poor. I'm glad to hear about those popes condemning it. What about the current pope? I've heard him supposedly being accused of, holding to or believing in socialism, but I'm not sure that that's accurate. I haven't read the details myself, and I wondered if maybe that's a translation. I don't know, a translation issue.
It's not a translation issue primarily. It's a New York Times and other newspaper interpretation of what he said issue. I have studied his writings carefully.
Well, what are his views? What are his views?
So he's not his view, and I think this is very important. He says, like Christ, we have to have a deep concern for the poor. Okay. And so I think, and I've actually written about this elsewhere, that what he's criticizing is exactly what you're criticizing, which is crony capitalism. Because what he's criticizing is companies and governments that seek only to make as much money as they can and move money around and so on, always just for the purpose of making as much money as they can, without any thought particularly for the poor. And he's saying, no, we have to be concerned about our brothers and sisters in Christ, especially the poorest of the poor. And I think he's exactly right, and I think all Christians agree with him on that. And I think we can agree, particularly in cases of crony capitalism, that there are people who don't live that way, and it's right to criticize them. But unfortunately, I think those words are taken sometimes out of context or accentuated and made it sound like he's actually criticizing the market system itself, which is what helps us achieve the wealth that lifts people out of poverty, right? I think he recognizes that. In fact, we have a conference next month in Rome at the Vatican, and he will be having a meeting with the Pope, talking exactly about these things. It's about how to bring about more what we'll call solidarity through business, how to bring about more Christian love of neighbor through business. I have one board member for my school who said the other day, he said, you know, if we as business leaders had found a way to get health insurance for people who didn't have it and wanted it, then Obamacare could never have happened.
Wow.
But to the extent that we as business leaders take the lead in this, we reduce the opportunity for government to want to step in and do things in often a very un-Christian way. And I think he's right. And I think we all need to be thinking about these things. So that's why we wrote this book, why we started our school, and there are many other Christians who are trying to do this. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. How about one or two other key principles of Christianity that apply to business? And then I want to get back to the Hobby Lobby issue before we close the program.
Sure, sure. So I'll just maybe take one more that maybe people would be surprised to hear. So in the book, we talk about advertising, for example. And one of my students just this morning in class raised the question, how does one be a Christian, live as a true Christian in terms of deciding how to do advertising? And the answer there is you have to make sure what you're trying to promote with your advertising are positive lifestyles and trying to encourage your customers to do things that are good for them. So to use advertising to corrupt people in order to make more money is clearly unchristian, clearly wrong. And so anybody who's responsible for buying or writing advertising should keep that in mind and make sure that the advertisements that you are creating, whether they be online or TV or radio, are ones that are uplifting, are ones that help people do good rather than ones that are degrading or tear people down.
Yeah, and I would add to that, of course, and this is just a given, but it's got to be truthful, too. I mean, don't claim that this product that can do X, Y, Z if it can only do X, if that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
All right, so returning to our top story here, just to put things in context, here the government is going after Hobby Lobby and saying you, as a Christian-owned company, you must provide abortion-inducing drugs for your employees, whether they want them or not. You've got to pay for them. Oh, and by the way, Obamacare wouldn't have passed if it weren't for the surrender of a handful of very stalwart Democrats who said, we want to make sure that there's nothing in Obamacare that's going to provide for abortion. So Obamacare would never have passed without the Bart Stupak, without them saying, okay, President Obama, we'll trust you with your executive order that abortion will not be covered under Obamacare. And now here we are these years later, and the Obama mandate or the Obama administration is forcing this mandate to the point where Hobby Lobby would probably go out of business if they're successful in this case. That is the U.S. government. It's terrible.
Yeah, it is. There's a general principle, I think, that also speaks to this that we also cover in the book. It's one that surprisingly few people have heard of. It's the principle of subsidiarity. The principle of subsidiarity, and this is a Christian principle, says that it is immoral, it is gravely immoral, for a higher-level organization to interfere with the functioning of a lower-level organization when that lower-level organization is functioning well. And so that means that it's immoral for the federal government to interfere with state governments. It's immoral for any of those to interfere with, say, a corporation or with a family.
Yes.
If what they're doing is purely functional. It's also immoral for a foreign government or international body to interfere with the United States if we're running well. So there's a moral issue here that this proliferation of government regulation and intrusion into every aspect of life is actually, in itself, is a violation of Christian morality, not just in the specific things that they choose to do, but the actual interference itself is immoral itself, if that makes sense.
Surely. Thank you so much for being with us. We've been talking today with Dr. Andrew Abella, co-author with Joseph Capizzi, of a book called A Catechism for Business, which deals with tough ethical questions and gives insights from Christian teaching through the centuries. Thank you so much, Dr. Arbella. God bless you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay,
bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.